Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning, Los Angeles. Good morning, Southern California. Good morning, the United States. As you know, yesterday, our hero Muhammad Ali passed away. The media says it's respiratory illness, complications of Parkinson's disease. He was my hero, one of my heroes. I'm sure many of you share the sentiment. Today's show, my tribute to Muhammad Ali, how I wished I could have helped Muhammad Ali, the dangers of head trauma. No news to many of you that followed his prolific life was the fact that at some point along the way, he started to show signs of, well, what I guess we could call pugilistic damage, damage to the brain. They called it Parkinson's, but sometimes it's just a general word for a certain part of the brain get damaged, but who knows, along with many other parts. And as we mourn him and celebrate him more than anything else, I want to point out today, as it's relevant today's show, that all of us can relate on so many levels to head trauma, and we don't realize that. And that's what I want to devote the show to today, because our hero suffered, and I think he suffered, well, in a way unnecessarily. Young boxers today, all the guys that fight in MMA, they look at the older fighters as many of them. I mean, if you look at what happened ultimately to Joe Frazier, to Kenny Norton, to Jerry Quarry, to so many of the fighters from the 60s and the 70s that took so much trauma to the head. Many of these guys, by the time they were 40, 50 years old, were really, really suffering. And the younger fighters know this, but I don't really see them approaching their field that much more differently. More important to you is the fact that all of us suffer from head trauma, and we don't know that. Nor do these young fighters. Because we're not given the framework through which we can reference the damage that occurs when the upper cervical spine begins to get compressed. This is something, it would be my dream. I have my dreams. If my dreams come true someday, your average adolescent will be sensitized through training, just like we train as boxers, just like train as athletes, just like we train as gymnasts, so on and so forth, to reference these shifts that occur, that you can sensitize yourself to, that occur all the time in that upper cervical spine area, and begin to alter in some way brain function, to be able to catch this early, to understand the dynamics of this. Well, that's one of my dreams. And I'm always putting shows on. I'm always doing shows and talking about anterior head carriage. And if you look at a young man at 20, and you look at a young man at 30, and you look at a young man at 40, and a young man at 50, and a young man at 60, and a young man at 70, and you watch him from the side, you watch that head come forward. There are these postural shifts that we just take for granted in American culture, in world culture. That's what happens as you get older. You start slouching at the shoulders, and your head comes forward. But if you really understand anatomically what's going on, then you understand that there is a snuffing out, there is a compression of the brainstem that occurs as that head goes forward. And it begs the question then, the essential question, when you talk about damage to the brain from what you think is brain trauma, how much of that is embellished, facilitated, perhaps more of it even caused by the fact that as you train in an athletic profession, or as you just age at the desk, that every year that head's going a little further. And then to add that to the danger of head trauma, now you're creating the perfect storm. To put it just on the back of punches to the head is not fair. The child born in utero with the cord around its neck gets birthed, usually as an emergency cesarean, gets birthed with head trauma. The child that's born breech. The child that simply stays in the canal too long, that gets its head stuck on the pubic bone. The child that's experiencing the grief or anxiety of the mother, if in fact she just states through, for whatever reason, a traumatic 9 months instead of a holy, sacred, celebrated, safe, secure, and gentle 9 months. That child receives that trauma. That child constricts its head. It brings its shoulders to its ears and its heads forward. And sometimes forever, it's imprinted with an anxiety pattern that crushes the upper cervical spine. But Ali didn't start that way, certainly not. I want to do something with you slightly uncharacteristic. I want you to go to the website. I hope many of you are on the website. That's straighttalk.cc. Of course, many of you are driving, mowing your lawns. You can't get to the website. Get there later. I want you to look at this. That's straighttalk.cc. We're going to take a couple of minutes, and I want you to watch this video. This is all over YouTube. Muhammad Ali, amazing hand speed. It goes to a great soundtrack by Infinity, Double X it's called. And you just got to watch this. And I put it on the show not just to celebrate the life of Muhammad Ali, but also to show you what biomechanics, what excellent, what superb biomechanics really means. When I talk, and many of you hear me talk consistently about this muscle, the psoas muscle, and that when that muscle is competent and when that muscle's in balance, you're going to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. If you go down to picture number 7, and you take a look at picture number 7, on the left is the old man. That's the boxer, the fighter, when he retires and he can't move his legs anymore. On the right, that's what you're about to see. Those blocks, picture 7, on my website, on the show today. How I wish I could have helped Muhammad Ali. Picture number 7, that picture on the right, you're about to see someone move when his bones stack up like the picture on the right. And when you can't walk and when you start feeling like you're going to trip over your own feet and when every step of the way is painful, it's because you have degenerated into the picture on the left. That's when your biomechanics are so faulty that all the force vectors, the lines of force through the bones, are going through such inappropriate angles that it inflames the joints, and you feel that. How I wish I could have helped Muhammad Ali is to take him as a 20-year-old and to make sure that these degenerations never occurred. You know, not that he needs my help. And that isn't the point, but this is my hero. Maybe he's your hero. And that aside, all of us suffer from this, and we shouldn't. We just don't understand it. Why don't athletes understand this? They don't. No, they do not. By the time most fighters are 30, their legs are gone. Their legs are gone because they start out like those string of blocks on the right, and they end up like that string of blocks over the left. I'm a boxing guy, always have been. I follow that sport for 40 years. And you watch these guys as they age. It's not just boxers, it's everybody. Football players, baseball players, basketball players. But then again, it's you and me. It's grandpa who simply worked at the factory. We got to get these concepts down. Now watch what a man looks like when he's aligned. Let's click on the video right now. I'll talk periodically and just give yourself the 4 minutes. That's right. We're going to make this our tribute. 4 minutes of airtime to a great American. Just watch this man move. That's Fighting Liston. That's Sonny Liston. He's taking the championship. He wasn't supposed to beat Liston. He was cocky. He was young. He was expressive. He didn't bend over. And at that point, no one liked him. Now he's our hero. Back then, in the early sets, Zora Foley. He's fighting Zora. It's Henry Cooper. Cleveland Williams. Sonny Liston. Now look at him dance. See, they couldn't hit him. You could never hit Ali. His foot speed and his balance at all times was such that no matter what you did, he was gone. No matter who you were when you threw your punch, Ali was already out of it. And you're going to see at certain points as he moves across the ring, he does the Ali foot shuffle. He just gets so psyched. He was just like a young leopard. A young, beautiful leopard. He could slip. And then he'd throw these combinations of punches that came out of nowhere. And once you were under the rein of those hands, you were done. You were going to fall. I want you to get a sense of, as you watch him move, is his center of gravity. So that muscle, you're always listening to me taught about, the psoas. It's stretching and bending and moving. It's allowing his pelvis to stay in alignment with his upper body. So in any given moment, from no matter what angle he throws his punch, he's balanced. You see? That's what it is to be biomechanically aligned. And he stayed that way all the way until, well, he stood up against the Vietnam War. He resisted the draft. And as we all know, he spent 3 years in jail. Took the prime of his career away from him. But he stood up anyway. And in the end, he was vindicated. So we say he's bigger than boxing. That's why he's not just a boxer. He's a great man. Look at him. Just note the footwork and note the balance. Everybody that fights him is clumsy. But they don't have the biomechanical alignment, so they can't move like him. This is what dancers do. When you give dancers a pair of arms and a technique, well, then you have a boxer. That's the art of boxing. But it relies upon these principles that I continually talk about on this show. The psoas, the scalenes, the adductors, the hamstrings, the calves, the diaphragm, the scalenes. And there you have it. You watch this later on your own. Let's cut it now. Go off that. I've watched that 1,000 times. Now, I want you to go to picture number 5. Go to picture number 6. I want you to keep in mind the man you just saw, and I want you to look at picture number 6. Look at picture number 6. Now, there's Ali on the left, picture number 6. That's what you just saw. You just saw a guy with all the bricks stacked correctly. You just saw, well, you're looking at anterior head carriage. How heavy is your head? You're looking at picture number 6 right now. And what you're looking at in picture number 6, that guy on the left there, that's Ali. That's what you just saw. Now, I want you to look at the picture on the right. Look at the picture on the extreme right. You see, over the years, that's what happens to people. Now, I want you to look at picture number 1. You know, I kind of didn't want to put these pictures on, but you know what? He's just as beautiful. He's still just as beautiful in his own way. But look at picture 1 and think of his head. What I'm doing this for is I'm asking you to consider where that head is now. You see? It's come forward. Ali, through pugilism, through head trauma, through non-maintenance, through not being counseled correctly on how to take care of himself as an athlete, is starting to go the way that gravity brings you. It brings the head forward. Look at picture number two. Take a look at picture number two. There he is again. Still a rascal, still beautiful, still comedic, still wise, still powerful, still charismatic. But look at where that head's going. See, now, people will say, well, that's Parkinson's disease. It's not Parkinson's disease. Okay? That's anterior head carriage. Oh, yeah, with Parkinson's, that's what happens. No. That anterior head carriage is what drives Parkinson's. You can't say that. Where are all the double-blind placebo studies showing that we took two groups of 100 people each, all of them headed towards Parkinson's, and the ones whose heads we pulled back and the ones whose heads we let come forward, well, the ones whose heads we pulled back got much less or didn't get it at all. Where are those studies? You see? So you can't say what I just said, right? There's no relationship between the fact that a guy gets hit in the head and off the trauma and compression to those muscles in the neck, pulling the head forward over a period of years, age 19, age 20, age 21, 22, 23. Finally, at some point, there's been so much physical compression and anterior head carriage that combined with the trauma to the head, you're now putting yourself in a very dangerous terrain. You can't say that because that's just common sense, and common sense has no place. Until the geniuses in their ivory towers with their double-blind placebo studies prove this, you can't say it. You can't act on it. You can't assume it's true. You can't use your clinical gut. You can't use your common sense. So guys is big. I mean, how many doctors did Muhammad Ali have around him? How many physicians do you think treated that man? Of the best that money could buy, how many? Dozens, scores, hundreds, thousands. I guarantee you that. I guarantee you that. You see, no one's immune to this myopia in science. Doctors, medical doctors, are simply pawns spouting the garbage they hear in medical school. And that's delivered to your door as, well, there's no study to prove that anterior head carriage and its development over five decades could have anything to do with dementia of the brain, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, or any of these things. And until we have these studies, we can't make these statements. You see? Remember cigarettes? How many of you are old enough to be young enough to remember when you were little how everybody was smoking? There were just no double-blind placebo studies to prove that cigarettes were dangerous. How many women have their plumbing ripped out every single year for stupid reasons? How many people have their gallbladders sucked out and suffer the rest of their lives and are told this is just an arbitrary little move here. It doesn't mean a thing. How many people have their thyroids taken away? We do this all the time in medicine. There's our hero. Picture number three. Look at that. Look at picture number three. Look at where the head and the neck are. Now look at picture number four. Look at where the head and the neck is. We go back to picture one and two. Oh, of course, picture one and two. The heads come forward. That's Parkinson's. No, it's not. It happened to Kenny Norton. It happened to Joe Frazier. It happened to Jerry Quarry. It happens to lots of people. And as that head curls forward, our brains don't work. Grandpa didn't have Parkinson's, but he didn't know where his socks were. That's just old age, isn't it? No, it's not old age. It's anterior head carriage that's gone unattended to. Look at picture number five. You know, because of the things he said back in the 60s, standing up for himself, standing up for other African Americans, all African Americans, he was chided tremendously. Many people wouldn't even call him his name. His name was Muhammad Ali. Many people would insist on calling him by his slave name, Cassius Clay. even to the point where, as he fought for the championships, instead of being introduced as Muhammad Ali, the commentators, I've watched films in large memoriam, in large boxing halls, where they wouldn't even give him his name. And he stood up to it all. And America at one time thought he was bad. They booed him. Do you know when he fought Liston? He was booed. If you watch the films, he was booed repeatedly. The Ali we celebrate is the Ali we knew about 20, 30, 40 years later. But back in the early 60s, when he was making his bones, you see, he was booed. Now look at that face. Look at picture number 5. Could somebody with a smile that sweet be bad? But we didn't ask ourselves that in the early 60s. Well, some of us did. But this man took a lot of heat for his beliefs. That's one of the reasons he's our hero. And that's one of the reasons, with my knowledge base, I devoted this show to Muhammad Ali and to the fact that I wish I could have helped him. If I had him when he was 20, he wouldn't have this today. Let's keep going. Okay, we're going to move away from Muhammad Ali. I hope we have a national holiday for him. I certainly think we will. I certainly think whoever wins our next election, we will have a Muhammad Ali Day. I pray for that. Let's look at your neck. Picture number 8. Look at your neck. All the muscles around your neck are covering up what controls the position of your head on your neck. So let's look at picture number 10. Now go to picture number 9. Look at those muscles on the outside. The neck is protecting the head. The neck is a complicated bunch of muscles. It is infinitely complicated. When I work with someone, I pull every one of those muscles apart. And they're stuck on each other like glue. With connective tissue, fascial tissue. And when you get slammed in the head as many times as Ali, who was famous for minimizing the damage, he was an outstanding, a brilliant defensive fighter. He was gone. By the time you cocked your arm to throw, he was already moving somewhere else. You couldn't hit him, but dozens and dozens and dozens of fights. I mean, he had 60, 70 fights. And that doesn't include the amateurs, and that doesn't include all the sparring. But you at the desk, you're an insurance broker. Same thing happens. Those muscles get glued to the other muscles. They're all glued in one big mass. Now, on this picture 6, if you follow the picture up to the upper left-hand corner, do you see how those muscles become whitish? Look at picture 9. Look at picture number 9. If you follow those muscles all the way up to the upper left, they get white. That's the tendinous insertion, right? The muscle connects to the bone through the tendon. Those are tendinous insertions. Anything going on in your brain, which includes your eyes, your ears, your nose, your mouth, your mentation, your memory, and all the things around that, from your glaucoma to your cataracts to the polyps in your nose to the tinnitus in your ear to the deafness to the blindness to the dementia to the I'm just not as sharp as I used to be to the Alzheimer's to the Parkinson's to the brain tumors. It doesn't matter. There is a relationship between the structure of the body and function. And when you have less than optimal function, you make yourself more susceptible to disease. Do you really think it's right that we should wait another 5,000 years to have studies that support my statement? Do you think that the notion that proper structure creates proper function and that improper structure creates improper function, do you think we should wait another 10,000 years to have somebody prove that? I can prove it. Pay me to do that. When you ask anybody that understands this to prove it, you have to give them money to do it, unless they're independently wealthy, and I am not. Nor is most people who understand what I'm talking about. Rolf proved it. Ida Rolf proved it. But she never did a double-blind placebo study. Do you realize what that entails? And what do you come out with on the other end? You know what you come out with on the other end? Stretch your body, cleanse your body, work with people who have gifts with their hands so they can pull these adhesions apart and keep your body supple and youthful forever on, so you can live out your full genetic potential. That's what you get at the end of this equation. You don't get a drug that you can market to people that they just pop in their mouth and then can spend the next entire $150 billion celebrating. You don't fund these kinds of studies. And you, the public, have to understand this, lest you be susceptible to the beast. Yes, the beast. Mentalities that limit your common sense. Mentalities that make you feel like your situation and your place in life is hopeless. And that's why we love Ali. Because he felt the power of the beast, you see? And yet he stood up against Vietnam. He stood up against prejudice. He supported black Americans. And yet today we all love him. He's a unifying force. And it's the greatest service you can do, is to unify people. We'll have our day off for Muhammad Ali, like we do for Martin Luther King. Let's keep going. So, picture number 10. The scalenes. Picture number 10, the scalenes. Matted to, tied to, those bones are very deep muscles. These are muscles you don't feel. These are muscles you don't touch. These are muscles you don't stretch. These are muscles that people just get blanked on. And because of that, these muscles grow short and they grow tight. And that is one of the driving forces behind what pulls your head forward. So in therapy, in the therapies I do with people, in the therapies that anybody that knows anything does with people, you make sure that these muscles are stretched. You teach your clients to stretch these muscles. So these muscles lengthen. And as they lengthen in unison with the other muscles of the body, the entire body begins to shift back to what it once was. That is what I wished I could have done with Muhammad Ali. Now let's look at those scalenes and understand that when the scalenes pull tight, the head comes forward. So go back to picture six. Go back to picture six and look at the person on the left and the middle and the right. And as the person on the left and the middle and the right, as that person's scalenes begin to get stiffer and shorter and stickier, the head just gets pulled more and more forward, and we call it normal aging. It's normal aging. You're not supposed to look at 50 or 60 or 70 as majestic as you did at 20. Well, you're wrong. We are wrong if we think that. We are limiting ourselves if we think that. And we're just wrong. Those scalenes need to be tended to, as I just described. To the point where, well, if you don't, if that head comes forward, this is when it gets dangerous. Because as that head starts to go forward, you start to fibrose, clot up, spasm out muscles in the back of the neck. As the head comes forward, the muscles in the back of the neck begin to seize, because they have to hold the head like a bowling ball from falling off its perch. So cartoonistically, if that head comes forward and rolls off your head, the muscles in the back of the neck have to work triple overtime to keep that head standing up. Now, I had some head trauma to that, and you could understand your average athlete. Football. Even basketball is physical like that. Just talk to Bill Laimbeer. Picture number 12. Picture number 12. There on the left, the muscles of the neck. There on the right, the deep muscles of the neck. Just like earlier, the muscles in the front of the neck and then the deep muscles of the neck. The scalenes are the deep muscles in the front of the neck. They control the position of the neck. And if the neck comes forward, the head comes forward. And then these deep muscles in the back on the right there, they have to work too hard, the suboccipital muscles. Now go to picture number 14. Picture number 14. Look at picture number 14. Those are the muscles in the upper cervical spine called the suboccipital muscles. Those muscles control the head on the vertebra of the neck. When those muscles spasm up, you are in trouble. You will degenerate faster than you're supposed to degenerate. You will have less time on this planet in optimal function than not. Those are the suboccipital muscles. Let's take a look at another picture. Here's a great picture of the suboccipital muscles. Go to picture number 17. Excuse me. Go to picture number 21. Picture number 21. Take a look at picture number 21. That's a fantastic picture of your suboccipital muscles. Let's like dig our teeth into that. All those muscles between the first and second vertebra that are connecting up into the occipital bone and that big, thick, white thing that looks like taffy. As your head goes forward, those muscles seize. They lock. They get fibrotic. They get snotty. The amount of fibrin or adhesive fascial snag in between those muscles, on top of those muscles, becomes irreverent. Your head is an immobilized block on your neck. Now add some head trauma to that. You can understand our hero. You see? Now look at picture number. Look at picture number 19. Occiput C1, C2. Occiput, that's your skull bone that sits on the first cervical vertebra and the second cervical vertebra. Now look at picture number 20. There's C1 and C2. C1 is supposed to rotate on top of C2. Those bones are supposed to separate and be immobilized. Look at picture 22. You see how those, picture 22 now. You see how those little suboccipital muscles there? It's almost like if you pulled them. You see the relationship? That little suboccipital muscle is going from one part of C2, the spinous, to the transverse process of C1. Those muscles are part of what allows those bones to rotate with respect to each other. And then there are muscles that, if they're too tight, you can't separate the bone on top of C1. So there's decompressing. There's pulling your head off your neck. And then there's rotation of occiput C1, C2. C1 and C2 is supposed to rotate in the transverse or the horizontal plane. And those muscles facilitate that. The occiput, your skull bone, is supposed to be able to come off C1 to decompress. Now, this is all critical. Why is it critical? Well, I want you to get perspective here. Do you see picture 23? Take a look at picture 23. That big hole in that occipital bone, that big hole is taking the full width of the spinal cord and the dural sheath as it comes through that hole. Look at the other picture. Look at picture 24. Picture 24. Going down through that hole is your brain and spinal cord. Well, really, spinal cord. Your brain is just above it. Your spinal cord is beginning just below it. Now keep that in mind. Now look at picture number. Let's look at this. Let's look at picture 26. Look at picture 26. Do you see picture 26? That's a side view, a sagittal cut, we say. Look where that blue arrow is, the blue arrow, picture 26. If you go in there and you lift that guy's head off his neck, if you lift the occipital bone off the first cervical vertebra, you see where that blue arrow is? That area gets stretched. Don't just say you understand this. Really understand this. Don't just say it. Take this into yourself. Because that's how I wish I could have helped Muhammad Ali. Because that head, amidst the physical trauma, was coming forward. Because those muscles were getting shorter and shorter. Because the leopard, the young leopard we saw in that YouTube clip up above in his early 20s, was on his way to a lot of anterior head carriage on top of a lot of head trauma. And what it prevents then is the possibility, the opportunity, in this case, the privilege of grabbing that head and pulling it up and off the first and second cervical vertebra. And as you can see, if you look at this picture, picture 26, if you look at the blue arrow, as you lift that head, if you could lift that head and separate it off the first cervical vertebra, it will pump the brain. And pumping the brain is how the brain regenerates. And the minute our brain stops regenerating, we get old and our brains don't work. You have to pump that brain. The brain is a pumping mechanism that has variability in the rate at which it pumps. What double-blind placebo study has ever been produced, signed and documented and sealed by the greatest scientists in the world to prove that what I'm saying is absolutely true and should be reinstated into the annals of the standard of care of allopathic medicine tomorrow at Kaiser Permanente. You see, this is the idiocy we are being sucker punched by. It is the idiocy. Medicine makes great contributions every day. It is also on many levels idiotic. The scientific method, the purpose of it, was to give people a sense of reality against a sense of fantasy. The scientific method was a tool originally used to tell the Vatican that the sun, not the earth, was the center of the solar system. The scientific method was a tool to bring to people who were fantasizing about reality a better sense of reality. But the scientific method is not the only means through which we gather our sense of reality. To mitigate, to reduce our sense of how we know reality or truth to the scientific method is in itself an argument against the existence of God. Because that Jesus once walked the earth, that Jesus was God, that God is God, that there is a God, and that God influences us all, that we use God's name all the time, and the fact that how do you prove to the double-blind placebo study that there is a God is to really define the stupidity here. Would you deny? Ask your doctor that sometime. Ask your doctor if he would deny the existence of something, namely God, because there's no double-blind placebo study to support it. You understand the paradox here? You understand the danger of not understanding what I'm talking about? Just because we don't have a double-blind placebo study to support what I'm saying doesn't mean it's not in reality. It's called empiricism. It's called inference. And you can make mistakes with that along the way. Yes, you can, which is why you try to put it to double-blind placebo studies. But you know what? The double-blind placebo studies are always way behind your common sense. And because of the politics today, and the politics isn't going away, they're light years behind your common sense. Classic example, cigarettes. Look, for as much as, well, what happened in Germany in World War II was horror, the scientists there had the lowdown on cigarette smoke and cancer back in the 20s and 30s with lots of double-blind placebo studies. There are always consortiums of scientists that know the reality and the horror of things that get people sick. Cigarettes were one of them. But why do we have advertisements everywhere? We have advertisements of models. I'm talking about Claudia Schiffer, Cindy Crawford models inhaling DDT to tell America that DDT was harmless back in the 50s. Back in the 50s, if you said cigarettes were dangerous, that they caused cancer, that they were implicated in disease, you'd be laughed at. And yet we had consortiums of scientists back then that were writing and publishing two double-blind placebo study that DDT was a horror and that cigarette smoke was cancerous. And you're going to wait for a double-blind placebo study to prove what I'm suggesting here. That to mitigate the damage to young athletes with head trauma, not to mention yourself, that training yourself, cleansing yourself, stretching yourself, cross-fibering out your tissues to the point where bones separate would pump the brain, and that that pumping of the brain will grossly reduce the rate at which neurons die. You take that to the inner workings of you, and you'll look at it the way I do. Not to mention the fact that if you do this to people, you see life force come back. You see? If you truly understand how to do this, I'm not saying this is simple, but I am saying that the very essence of holistic medicine, you listen to this show, you listen to other shows, because you think there's another way. Right now we call it the alternative way. Lousy name. You see, getting your organs cut out is the alternative way. The natural way is the first way. The alternative way is the second way. If we could get that one straight, then we'd know where everything should stand. And you would watch the money you spend on health, right? This nation, the issue with insurance, socialized medicine, the whole thing, the whole mess that's never going to get settled. Well, bottom line is so much of that could be flipped on its back if we could understand the priorities here. We limit ourselves with these arguments. So let's go back and look at picture 26. How I wished I could have saved or helped Muhammad Ali was to have gotten into those muscles, to have taught his trainers to get into those tissues and lengthen them and cross-fiber them and cleanse them until the head could be pulled, cervically distracted, cervically decompressed, through the poses of yoga, through the machines we build. So we could have gotten a pumping mechanism between the occiput, the C1 and the C2. Because when you separate those bones, where you see the blue arrow begins to pulse and pump. Now, once you get separation there, well, something else happens that's quite magical. And that is that the dural tissue, the brain, if you go to picture 33, the brain there, picture 33, separating both hemispheres of the brain is a thick sheath of connective tissue, of dural tissue, dura mater. Dura mater, Latin for tough mother, tough mother. There's a tough sheath of connective tissue separating the hemispheres of the brain. There is a tough sheath of connective tissue that the brain sits on. There is a tough sheath of connective tissue that surrounds the brain, and there's a tough sheath of connective tissue that goes down the spinal cord. Picture 35. Go to picture 35. There's a tough sheath of connective tissue that goes around picture 35. Now look at that. So what's the brain? The brain and the spinal cord look like a tadpole. It's a big blobby head and a long tail. It's brain and spinal cord. Around that brain and spinal cord is a sheath. Dura mater. Well, when you separate occiput from the first and second cervical vertebra, you pull the sheath. You pull the dural tissue. When you pull the dural tissue moves the brain. It pumps the brain. It pumps the spinal cord. We actually have technology to measure that, but we don't use it. Nobody wants to do it. But for people that have it done to them, they can feel it. I'll say it a different way, that these athletes are not given the education to become relational. In other words, to have relationship with cervical decompression machines, with cervical decompression techniques, with all sorts of breath techniques, is, to me, it's a travesty. Traditionally, we've always had these groups that wanted to eliminate boxing or eliminate the MMA. And they never work. And we'll never eliminate these things. But the least that we could do is give our athletes an opportunity. Better yet, give the American public an education and an understanding of how to create relationship with upper cervical decompression. Oh, yes, I have an inversion table. I know what you're talking about. You kind of do. But what I'm talking about is something to be experienced by your body. Just because you hang upside down on a cervical inversion table doesn't mean you're having the experience that I'm talking about. So I'm getting a little ahead of myself, and we're getting a little more complicated. But you see, when we talk about technique, cervical decompression, when we talk about breath, when we talk about stretching, when we talk about massage, when we talk about all these natural mechanisms through which we theoretically benefit, until you have a physical feeling in the body of release, capital R, capital E, capital L, capital E, capital A, capital S, capital E, release, until you have the physical experience of deep circulation moving through body parts, the body parts that are stretched, you're not getting release and you will not get the benefit. Now, the minute I make that statement, I'm asking the actor not just to read the lines, but to make the audience feel their emotions. The minute I say that when you do these things, or when I suggest you do, and I won't leave you alone when you smile and tell me, well, I have an inversion table, I understand. I'm asking you to qualify that statement. I'm asking you to be the actor that reads the lines on the script and makes the audience feel emotion. I'm asking you to do these techniques and learn them to the point where you have the physical experience of release. Now I'll make it more complicated. Eastern medicine, you see? Eastern medicine. And this country has to get used to the fact that we can say Eastern medicine. and have open arms and take the best of Eastern medicine and incorporate it into the principles embodied in our Declaration of Independence and our American Constitution and welcome Eastern medicine. You see? Our country, which is divided in so many levels now, needs to understand that you judge things by the content of their character and what they have to contribute to humanity. And Eastern medicine has much to contribute to humanity. Case in point, Eastern medicine, yoga, tai chi, qigong, kung fu, used a term to tell you, to direct your senses to this physical experience of release. And that term was prana. The term was chi. When you do cervical decompression, you better feel chi inside your brain. Heat, warmth, circulation. When you do cervical decompression, when you learn to stretch your scalenes, when you learn to lengthen your psoas, you've got to feel a release in the form of warmth inside your brain. If Muhammad Ali had worked with me from the time he was 20, I would have had him cervically decompressed. So he would have felt the effects of head trauma and said, "Doc, I'm off. I'm off." To get hit by George Foreman, to get hit by Ernie Shavers, to get hit by any of these guys. Sonny Liston, not that Liston ever really hit him. But this is a man that took some punches. To have had him in his 20s say, "I'm in the off season now. I got 6 months to relax, train, regenerate," and to say, "I can feel the net effect to the head trauma, because when you cervically decompress me, when I go to stretch my neck, it's blocked. It's rigid. I need to get on the other side of it before I go back to my next game." And that is how I could have helped Muhammad Ali. Because you have to have a sensitivity to this. What was going on in Ali's brain was going on in Ali's brain in his 20s. Now, I'll tell you a little secret here. I don't know what it was. You know, for the last year, every night before I went to bed, I'd watch about 20 minutes of Ali boxing. One of the reasons I'm doing this show this way today is because, well, I knew someday he would pass. And I guess I'm being blessed here because he just happened to pass when I had a radio show, a couple of radio shows. And I have this wonderful privilege to voice myself. I've been watching about 20, 30 minutes of him every night for the last year on YouTube, all sorts of clips, not to mention another 20 years of studying him, what he brought to boxing, what he brought to the world. He is truly up there. He's in my list of the top five. You will see, America. As we contemplate his life and his passing, he will bring more unity to this nation than any other name you can mention. I truly hope we have our day, our Muhammad Ali Day, a day where the whole nation takes off, like for Martin Luther Day, so on and so forth. But that's what you have to give yourself. You have to give yourself the benefit of the doubt about this and really study. Get on the website, straighttalk.cc. Study this show. Study all the other shows on head trauma. And understand that as you hit 50 and 60 and 70, you don't have to degenerate. But you have to hold your standard. If you're working with a chiropractor, if you're working with an acupuncturist, if you're taking your yoga classes, if you're taking your massage, your rolfing, if you're doing breath work, whatever you're doing, you have to hold it to a standard. And that standard is of release. You can't just go through the motions. You have to hold yourself to the standard of release, because if you do, you'll figure out how to get there. And doing a technique, doing a cervical decompression move, and getting release is an infinite galaxy away from doing a cervical decompression move and not getting release. And that's why there's so much confusion about whether these things work. Because when these studies are run, when the people go into these double-blind placebo studies, nobody even has a concept of release. They just throw you in the study, do the technique to you, and then look at you and see if you're any different. That is a nonsense study. The design of the study is ludicrous. It doesn't even understand what it's studying. And then people suffer. Look at all the Ali quotes. I left them at the bottom for you. Muhammad Ali, we love you. I love you. 714-850-1007. If you're lost in the labyrinth of help, got questions, if you're spinning around in muck, 714-850-1007. Make an appointment, get some answers. God bless you.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.